Special guest
Ingrid Bretson.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Power Motion Picnic Hour. As always, I'm your host Dave, and as always, alongside me is
your co-host Trevor.
Hello Trevor, how are you? It's so good to be back on pod with you.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's been quite the week in running, a very long one between episodes.
I feel like this week was like 21 days long or something.
It was a long week in running. We've traveled the world and returned to the podcast studio.
So much has happened since the last time we talked. So much running. I wish I was keeping track. Actually, I didn't realize it would be so long in between episodes, but I'm gonna say I ran 50 miles.
Well, you've been running for both of us.
So we ran 50 miles.
Yeah. I might be able to add, I don't know, 5 or 10 to that, but it's been a volatile week in running. I promised on another episode to be more honest about my weeks in running. It's been a rather volatile week of 21 days of running.
Well, that's all right. It's a group effort, and it's a long-term thing, right? It's a lifestyle. I was trying to think of things to say that weren't, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Well, yeah, I was thinking I've been doing running, just not the type with feet on tread or ground. Other running in other aspects of life.
You've been running around.
Been running around.
Keeping busy.
Such is life.
Yeah. Well, what should we do first? Should we talk about our weekend running? Should we hit the mailbag? What do you think people want?
I'll leave it up to you. I'd say. Say I don't have a lot of reports for my weekend running, but if you have some things you want to share, maybe we get those out of the way up front and then go into the mailbag.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I'll just give maybe a little recap of my Saturday in running. It's Wednesday evening now. And Saturday I started the day early because I was working the water table at a 10K in Central Park. The 1 mile, so the first water table at a 10K. And
nice.
It was Greta's Gallop. And I had to report at the water table at, what time was it? 6:15 a.m. The race.
Early one.
Yeah. The race started at, 7:30 maybe? 7:30 a.m. But it was just a 10K. There's probably under 10,000 people running. But anyway, that was a pretty wonderful experience and something I've never done before. Pretty thrilling feeling as like the first runner comes in, and the first runner doesn't get water a mile into a 10K. Like, you know, if you were trying to win a 10K, you don't need water. But it wasn't long before people started coming to the table. You know, once you're not going to win, you're like, hey, I might as well have a drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
So probably the fastest person who wasn't a threat to win, which is still very fast, still a lot faster than I could run a 10K, came flying into the table. And I was positioned towards the end of the table, and I have pretty long arms. So I think my water cup stuck out more than a lot of people's. Because the other thing about when you're that far ahead of the pack is the table's not crowded.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you have 20 cups of water to choose from.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
He grabbed your cup?
I think the first one, maybe the first couple, and they just came flying in. And it was like shocking how fast that water cup comes out of your hand. It was amazing. But so, as you can imagine, the runners progressively get slower and slower, and they grab it more and more gingerly, and so it's a funny progression, to experience that first, you know, intense one that feels like a Randy Johnson fastball knocking the water cup out of your hand.
Yeah.
Until eventually there's 5,000 people kind of sauntering in and finding that excuse to slow down for a second, a mile into the 10K.
Yep. Yep.
Overall a wonderful experience and a great way to see a race, and it's always cool to see it from different angles and different perspectives.
Yeah. Mile one is unique. That's a funny water station.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever grabbed water that quick. Sometimes I do it like, cause I think of it as like practice for like doing it in a marathon.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't, I really don't need to be doing that cause I'm never really running a marathon fast enough to need to get that water grab technique down perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of my last major race that we've talked about frequently. the Kilkenny Ridge Race, I think the first aid station was maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 miles, maybe less than that, maybe five.
Okay.
And so we stop in, there's, I'm with coach friend. There's a dog. I go over to the dog. I pet the dog a little bit, talk to the owner.
Yes.
Thank the volunteers, talk about how it's so cool how they brought all this stuff, you know, 5 miles into the woods, eat some Reese's Pieces, some chips, and coach friends like, we better get moving through the aid station.
Oh, well, that's one way to look at it.
You know, and I was like, well, you know, maybe one more handful of Reese's.
Yeah, that might be the difference later when you're about to bonk, but you have a little bit of extra peanut butter in the tank.
Yeah, I'm surely not winning this race. And sure enough, I would bonk.
Despite the Reese's.
Yeah.
I wonder you think there's any protein in a whole bag of Reese's Pieces?
I think so. I think there's peanut butter elements in there, and peanuts have protein.
Yeah, there's some actual peanut in there.
I think so. A small amount.
Yeah. I wonder. I can't wait to look this up afterwards. I'm going to say in a whole bag, like, well, I guess like a personal bag that you like you'd get at the counter at a convenience store. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say there's 1 gram of protein in that whole bag.
I'm going to go with 3.
All right.
Just to be a bit provocative. Well, I guess we'll find out next time.
I can't wait for 21 days from now to find out how many grams of protein are in a bag of Reese's Pieces.
I will say at that point, though, it's more about the calories and the sugar and the quick sort of energy to burn sure. than the protein. So
good point.
To get me through to aid station 3 where I can finally get a quesadilla.
Yeah, that's the serious stuff. I got to get down with these kind of races, I guess.
Mountain lightning.
Yeah, I thought I was just taking it real easy in my first marathon when I was just walking through the water stations. But that was because of the heat, and I was trying to like down 3 cups of water, and I wasn't doing too hot anyway. But anyway, at this past race on Saturday, it was real early for me. So I went home afterwards, after having some breakfast, I went home and crashed and slept for like 90 minutes, maybe. And nice. I don't usually sleep when it's not, you know, regular sleeping time. So that meant I was real tired. But then I got up and, you know, started thinking. I didn't just start thinking this that afternoon, but I've been thinking that the New York Marathon's getting close.
Yeah.
And so got to get serious about upping the mileage. So went out in the afternoon and knocked out a nice 11 miles.
Very nice.
Yeah. Along the river, ran down to Battery Park, then up the west side up to, up to like maybe 18th Street and then back around to where I live.
Did you get to Little Island?
I ran by Little Island, but it was a Saturday. So Little Island in August, so Little Island was swarming with tourists.
Yeah. Tourists. Nobody's going for the Manhattan Loop FKT on Saturday in August.
And it was pretty warm, so people were moving real slow, speaking in every language known to man, having a great time.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so that was my day.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I did a couple runs. I will say one interesting thing. So speaking of Randy Johnson, I was in Seattle for a week or so, roughly a week.
Birthplace of the popular part of Randy Johnson's career.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a hilly city, did not do much running, but I did. So I went a week or two without running.
Okay, good.
And then I ran, and I noticed, this is the dilemma. I noticed my like heart rate data was like bad.
Uh-oh.
I was like, oh man, that was a pretty weak run, and I was in zone 3, like 40% more than the prior run several weeks ago.
And this is something your watch tells you?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So yeah, it was a little bit eye-opening. I mean, I guess these things, you know, sort of can come and go rather quickly.
Yeah, I don't even know. Someone was recently asking me a question about, you know, how long you should stay in zone 2 or the idea about staying in zone 2 as long as you can. And they brought this question to me because they know I'm a popular running podcaster, and I had to tell them I have no idea. I don't know anything about it. I don't even really know what zone 2 is.
Yeah. I think it's something like sub 150 heart rate, but if you don't monitor your heart rate and you don't know you don't know what it is at any point in time. You would go off of perceived exertion.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I could approximate it. Yeah.
Yeah, like what, on a scale of 1 to 10, like how hard was it? How, you know, did you go 100%? Did you go, you know, 50? That a lot of people will sort of argue is a better way to track even than heart rate, because heart rate can be different between people. The monitors themselves can be faulty. This is some really good sort of running content here, information.
That's true.
For the dear listener.
It's pretty educational this week, but it kind of makes me think of every time I'm at like the doctor, and if I have some kind of issue going on and they ask me to describe the pain on a scale of 1 to 10. And I always want to be like, I mean, that's pretty subjective, you know, like my five is not the same as your five, you know?
Yeah. I think it normalizes, like, you know, there's probably, you're right. I mean, there's probably like outlier cases, but I bet it does a pretty good job capturing what they're trying to get, like, you know, roughly 80% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I guess so. It's funny, in different situations, you're reporting pain differently. Like if a tattoo artist ever asks you if it hurts, like, oh no, it's fine.
Oh, it's good. Yeah.
It's fine. Oh, it's fine. No matter what it feels like, the response is exactly the same, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you should avoid that with a doctor, I think, or in what we're describing here, trying to approximate your heart rate.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess to give you a sense of the heart rate side of it, when I'm just out for regular training runs, I'll try to stay in zone 2, like 75-80% of the time.
Okay.
And then occasionally push maybe hills here or there, do some, you know, some quick sprints, you know, strides for speed, stuff like that. But for the most part, like time-wise, you know, yeah, I'm happy if I'm like 70-80% zone 2. All right. And what happened the other day was I was like 70% zone 3. And I was like, what the hell just happened?
And you weren't running.
That's a run I used to do in zone 2. Like, yeah.
You weren't running very fast. You were running.
Right. No, it was a very similar, I think I went with a similar sort of pace as I would have when I was in better shape just a few weeks ago.
Gotcha. Well, you'll get back to it quick. I think so. You gain fitness as quickly as you lose it, maybe.
I think that's what some people say.
All right. Well, I look forward to the correction about that one in the mailbag. It'll be good to open up the mailbag because we haven't dipped into there in a while. And speaking of, maybe we should dip into the mailbag right now.
Oh, let's do it.
If there's anything in there, because I should say I don't have anything that I can recall, because I keep the mailbag entries that I receive in my head. And in this a long week in running, I think I've forgotten everything I committed to getting to and addressing on pod.
It's been a long week in running. We you know, everyone can forgive that. We're a very forgiving podcast.
Yeah, we request forgiveness.
And we also request forgiveness in return.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got some mailbag. I definitely do. I've got kind of filled up a bit on my end. So I did want to welcome a new listener.
Oh, cool. From Belgium?
No.
Okay.
From the United States, my brother-in-law, Dave.
Hey, Dave, welcome. Welcome to the Power Motion Picnic, our extended family.
Dave is working his way sequentially from episode 1 forward. So it'll be several weeks before he gets this welcome message. But I think that'll be nice when he does. And he submitted a mailbag.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's hear it.
It's a throwback to the Backyard Ultra that I hosted last summer with the children, of which he is father of 2 of them.
Oh, cool.
Including the second place finisher. And apparently there's been some dispute about the recounting of this event.
Okay.
Second place finisher believes that he actually did 20 laps and that I did 27, so I still won. We did far fewer laps than that.
What did you say on the episode?
I don't remember. I think something around like probably 11 or 12.
Okay. But he remembers it as like he was getting the FKT for the long trail or something.
Correct. And funny enough, he did. I do distinctly recall mid race, he took a break and like went over to the deck and probably ate a snack and did some things for a solid 30, 45 minutes.
Nice.
And then resumed racing, which, you know,
I mean, it's just that's the aid station, right? So
is that allowed? I don't know.
Based on our earlier discussion from this episode, I might say it is if there were Reese's Pieces over there.
Based on the, you know, the winter Tri Mountain Challenge in New Hampshire, elapsed time versus, you know,
it's competitive, true.
Competitive advantage from a delay, including snack.
That's true. Yeah. All right. DQ.
We're going to DMNF them.
Yeah.
I guess we'll let the listeners decide.
Well, I like thinking about the mailbag question where, you know, they're remembering the race differently because memory is a crazy thing and people remember things differently. And it'll be interesting when Dave finally catches back up to this episode to see if he even remembers asking that question.
That's true. And speaking of Tri Mountain, heard from both, we got some votes from both special guest Will Peterson and Coach Friend.
Okay.
Coach Friend did want to clarify that Rockhopper is the inventor. He was just there along with him for the journey. Both agree it should be sort of an allotted time between mountains that's determined by the speed limit. So you can't. Yeah, that seems like the right answer for safety and fairness. And
yeah, and knowing nothing about the rules myself, I thought that made sense as well.
So we can feel good about contributing to the world of fastest known times.
All right.
It was our suggestion, I believe.
What do you do in that race again? You run up Wildcat Mountain.
Yeah, you start with Wildcat. You go down to, or no, you go, yeah, you go down to Cannon, and then you go down to Tecumseh, which is Waterville Valley. Those are three 4,000 foot mountains in New Hampshire with ski areas.
And you run up and down them?
No, you do it in the winter the fastest way you can.
Oh.
And so that's the
ski lift. is that an option?
No, ski lift, not an option. You have to power yourself. But you would, so yeah, that's the fun thing about the FKT is there's, you know, how do you do that? Do you skin up with a backcountry setup? Do you
see?
I believe Coach Friend and Ty did it with cross country skis. And like, you know, did as much as they could on those, and then cruised down the Alpine, you know, resorts with their cross country setup, just like madmen.
Yeah, well, I was thinking I could see myself doing it with no skis, just throwing myself down the old Polecat.
Yeah,
is that what it's called? The long green circle from the top of Wildcat Polecat, I think.
Oh, it's a good reference. If it is, I don't remember that.
I haven't skied Wildcat since, I mean, the early 90s. So
it's been a while.
Yeah,
it's been more than a few weeks in running, but yeah, so I mean, but yeah, the sort of, I think that setup has the advantage of there's no like time at the top to, you know, adjust the setup, you know, put something on, take something off, like you just go. I got an update on our Crampion.
Oh, cool. Okay, let's hear.
So he's been doing a lot of fetch in the water.
Who is our Crampion again?
Randy's dog Alpine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
congratulations Alpine. I'm sorry I forgot your name, or yeah, forgot who you were.
Yeah, it's been a while since we recorded that episode, and I think just to empty the mailbag out completely, have a message that says thank you Dave.
Hey,
yeah, for the Wide World of Sports reference to the Johnny Mosley story.
Is that what that was? It was a Wild World of Sports episode?
That's what this listener claims.
Okay, I believe it.
Yeah, and this listener posited that our special guest at the time, when you made that reference, Will Peterson, not being a Fortissimo, might not be aware of it.
Oh, you know, I didn't think about that. Yeah, sometimes I forget if we're talking to a younger person that they don't remember 1998 the way I do. Like, for instance, he might have been born in 1998.
Rarely are we sensitive to context at all. We just go on with our references, our obscure references to various things.
It's very much like the film The Matrix, where like they just like stopped in the year 1999.
Yeah.
And just like, right, that's like the world they put everyone back in, which they called the peak of human civilization, which I think was right, I think.
Yeah, things have been pretty downhill since then.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't perfect. We had our problems. but you know, we had you know, gotten to the point of inventing parabolic skis. we finally got past that whole straight ski thing. The one exception, I suppose, being Mosley on those little red, white, and blue K2s that he wore in Nagano. Who can forget? At least those of us who were there. What a great Olympics.
Yeah. 360 Iron Cross grab was revolutionary. And then I think he would eventually go on to do it as a backflip.
Yeah, which he then renamed the dinner roll.
Mm-hmm.
See, these are the things people don't know about anymore. They're not talking about this stuff.
That's why they come to the pod. It's one of the reasons why we've gained such popularity. I think that's what the listeners are here for.
Yeah. And that makes me realize, I think we took this this three week while the Olympics were going on this summer. And I don't know if we talked any Olympics at all on pod, have we?
We haven't. I mean, there were so many amazing Olympic achievements, weren't there?
What did you like on the track? We should cover it a little bit. Did you have any favorites? Did you watch, what was it? The men's?
The 1500?
Yeah, the 1500. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing.
That's the one that stands out to me. Yeah. Overpassing Ingrid Bretzen, Jakob. We've talked about him before, the Norwegian that would, you know, sort of like trail these races and then just kick.
Yeah.
We were comparing that style to our own performances at the Community Mile once, I believe.
That was the coolest race. It's funny because I've forgotten almost everybody's name now as well. Like, you know, aside from like Noah Lyles and like Sha'Carri Richardson and Femke Bol.
Was Sha'Carri Richardson allowed to compete? She
came in second in the 100 meters.
Amazing.
And I can't now remember the name of the runner from St. Lucia who won.
Oh yeah, the first ever medal for St. Lucia.
She was amazing. And she also silvered in the 200.
Wow.
And here's a question that we were talking about back at my apartment while we were watching this. Why doesn't Sha'Carri run the 200?
It's a good question. And I wouldn't think they would be substantially different in terms of training.
On my high school team, the same we had the best runner in the division at both events, and it was the same guy.
I will say I ran the 200, but not the 100. I did the 110 hurdles, which might have been like stacking too many events to do the 100. But I also feel like I was better at the 200 on a relative basis than I was the 100. 100 is like the sprint. Like that's like who can go the fastest, just maximum speed.
Yeah.
I think those runners have a hard time sustaining that for 200. So you could have a slightly slower runner that could do. Doesn't have as high of an absolute speed like threshold, but can do better because they can hold whatever their speed is for longer.
I ran the 100 a little bit in high school. I don't think I ever did the 2, but
2 is fun. You start on the curve.
Yeah, I like that. I was
so you have no idea like what place, like who anybody's like, you know, because everything's staggered. It's like, you know, nobody, you don't really have a good idea of the race until you get to the 100. So
yeah, so that would have been good for me. I always tell the story of this because on my team, I was usually the third fastest 100 meter guy. So like that means I usually finished fifth or sixth in a race of six people. but there was this one race and I don't know what it was, but I just flew out of the blocks. You know, I just came out. So I just did it perfect timing. And like, I just came out perfect. And about 50 meters in, I like glanced and realized I was in first place. Wow. Yeah. And like, anyway, I think I like freaked myself out being so surprised to be out there because I wasn't supposed to be in first place. And I definitely finished in fourth place. So I had like this amazing first 50. And then the second 50 was just like maybe worse than usual, you know, because I should have at least been able to scrape out a third place out of that. But it's still, you know, it's still a lot of distance to go that back half.
Yeah.
But it was anyway, and back to the Olympics, it was cool watching the men's 100 actually, because they were all so close to each other. Every single guy in that final heat
was
within like, I forget what they were in, like 0.04 or something seconds of each other.
It's amazing. Yeah. And it's just incredible how people just figure out like how to just keep pushing it, you know?
Pretty cool. Although they weren't like in Usain Bolt territory. So
yeah.
So we haven't like continued breaking records in that regard.
I feel like there were a lot of other records smashed though. I mean, that's probably got to be one of the hardest, right? 100, especially held by like Bolt.
Yeah, Bolt was good. I love Bolt. personal favorite Olympian.
Yeah, he could run.
So here's another, this isn't really running, but it's track and field, so I think we're allowed to cover it. That guy, that dude who pole vaults for Sweden, even though he's from Louisiana.
Yep.
What's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not really cool with that.
I think there's a decent amount of that across Olympic, disciplines now. I think go to countries to, they get recruited and stuff.
Hey, what's up with that? I was at dinner last night and with a couple former work colleagues, one from Japan and one from Australia. And so there was a little bit of competitiveness in we were talking about the Olympics, a little bit of competitiveness, mm-hmm. the total medal count. And those are three top countries right there, US, Japan, Australia. And I didn't even think to mention that we got this dude breaking the world record, the pole vault for Sweden.
I mean, I'm sure we've had some athletes, in the other direction too.
True. We've got Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
But he lives here. Like that dude from, from Louisiana has never lived in Sweden.
Really?
Yeah. He's just like a dude from Lafayette. I don't know. We're not saying
he's just go join any country's Olympic team.
I like how we're not saying his name, kind of like how people don't say the name of the 45th president.
Yeah.
We're doing that from the pole vaulter from Louisiana. We just describe him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. I wonder, is there a country that like one of us could compete for? Is there a way to do that?
I don't think so.
I think all the countries I could make a claim for are pretty good. Is anybody?
I can't think of any country even outside of that group that could use our skills in running. Yeah,
that's
to
fair.
Compete in the Olympics. Yeah.
fair enough. I couldn't. My high jumping skills are rustier than ever.
We could maybe go do some coaching.
Okay. Well, we'll figure out by the next one how we can contribute. They'll be in LA in 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about LA a lot. We've had many special guests from LA. So why not go compete there?
Yeah. I ran a marathon there. I have a PR in the LA marathon. So I can't wait to see that the LA marathon in 4 years. I didn't watch the marathon in the Olympics.
I watched very, very few events live. Have been listening to a fair amount of Warren Zevon, though.
That's more important. Any favorites or anything that you were listening to over and over?
Yeah. It's an album that I've listened to less. I've been listening to, as you know, David Kilgore of The Clean, his solo works, which have been quite nice. I can't wait to run to some of those.
Future song of the week. So I'll give myself an excuse to not edit that into this episode.
Do you know which album has Empty Hearted Town on it?
No, but I could punch that into my little pocket computer. I know we don't usually do this.
I think I listened to it off Preludes, but that might be a compilation. Yeah, rare and unreleased.
Oh yeah. This is a Bad Luck Streak at Dancing School.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great record. That's Zevon's third record, I believe.
So that has to do with LA too.
Yeah, there. All of his stuff's about LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
One song about London. Everything else is about LA.
Yeah.
Think about it. Carmelita. That's LA. That whole album, I guess. That whole self-titled album.
Yep. Yep. Podcasting works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, I do love some Zevon. I used to play a little Carmelita as part of my acoustic set.
Nice.
But I was thinking I should replace it with a different Zevon song.
Yeah, I kind of returned to it after special guest Tim Hill was talking about doing a cover. I think you brought that up from his Lagniap sessions.
Yeah, he did Accidentally Like a Martyr from Excitable Boy.
A great one. Yeah,
great one. Great album, great song, personal fave.
Yeah, great album, great pick off a great album too.
Oh yeah, no, I basically like every Warren Zevon song I've ever heard, so everyone's a personal favorite. If I haven't heard it, that's the only reason it's not a personal favorite.
Well, I'm excited for you to listen to some David Kilgore, and I believe even has released some recent stuff. He's been doing the solo stuff. I think he did one in maybe 1990, but then sort of like started the solo career proper, as far as I can tell, in like the early 2000s. Okay. So, that was an interesting time for music, and you can hear a little bit of that influence, but I feel like his most recent stuff is within the past couple of years. So who knows, maybe we even go song of the week.
I was gonna say we should maybe make one the next song of the week, and then I even have an idea for the following song of the week, so we can get back on that train. Yeah, get rolling a little bit with the old school style podcast over here.
Yeah, and we'd be remiss. I mean, we've already, as always, referenced several special guests, but we would be remiss to not mention just the great run of special guests we've had over the last several episodes. It's been a very sort of consistent streak.
Yeah, those are all great kind of modern classic episodes. I was, when I watched, speaking of LA, John Mulaney's show, everyone's in yeah. LA, he called it on episode 5 that was going to be the best episode
nice.
At the beginning, and it was
cool.
So, you know, it's sometimes it's okay to be aware of greatness when you're in the middle of it, you know.
Yeah, and it's nice to do sort of a traditional pod again, but sure, we'll have special guests back again soon. We sort of started the season 3 with a few, it's like yeah. a little sort of stretch of no special guests, and then we just went gangbusters.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy season, and I think we're probably getting close to the end of season 3. I completely lost count of what episode we're on. I think this might be episode 46.
Yeah, I think it's episode
or 47.
Maybe 18 for season 3. How many do we have? 22? I don't know.
I think there's supposed to be 16 episodes in season 3, actually. So this might be the season finale.
It's possible. Let's maybe it's like 15. But yeah, so we're approaching the end of season 3.
Well, it's exciting to find that out. Kind of a shocking twist at the end of this episode that's going to give us a cliffhanger to the season finale next. Unless this is the season finale, because that's not even clear.
We will find out next time.
We'll find out
on the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
We'll find out next time whether it's the season finale or the season premiere.
Yeah.
Let's see. I watched the women's 10,000 from a running store in Austin, Texas.
Very nice. How was that experience?
That was great. They had like a couch and like maybe two couches, and yeah. And I was like, I was there with Female Gear Shed testing correspondent, and she was picking up a pair of Saucony Endorphin 4s.
Oh, nice.
And now I just remember I was supposed to report her Gearshed review. So here it is. I don't remember any of the details, but she loves them.
Amazing. I've only heard good things about the Endorphins.
I know.
I did Gearshed test the Endorphin Rift trail shoe at some point last year and just couldn't find the right size, but I did love the shoe.
Okay. And I Gearshed tested 2 trail shoes. My first, just running around the REI.
Which ones? Tell us about it.
I think the one I liked was the Salomon Thundercross. Is that a shoe that exists?
Ooh, probably. They do have like a Speed Cross, I know.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And then I ran around the store also in a Hoka. I've never worn a Hoka before.
It's a different experience. Yeah.
I didn't like it as much. The guys in the Salomon was my favorite, and that's all I tried. The guys in Austin, I'd asked them the same questions, and they recommended either the Nike Pegasus trail running shoe or this Cloud, you know, or was that what it was
on
Cloud trail shoe, which I liked because it looked like the color of the trail. So I enjoyed that. But then when I got to REI in New York, the guy told me that was a terrible choice because it doesn't have enough tread. He said it doesn't do much for you. He said the Nike Pegs were a great choice, but they didn't have them. So then he recommended these two others.
Yeah. I think, the Pegasus Trail is a classic, I think. A lot of people like that shoe.
And I've been getting more and more into my Tracksmith Elliott Runners, which people tell me is a lot like the Peg. So nice. it makes me think I should try that one out before pulling the trigger on a trail running shoe.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. Reasonable approach.
Yeah, but I think I'm not ready anyway. And we are getting low on time, which is something I don't need to tell you, but I've gotten in the habit of saying it because we like to tell our guests that, just to give them a heads up and enough time to get their finishing thoughts in. I'm going to get a little behind the curtain here. I'm going to try to edit this episode tonight, Wednesday the 21st, so we can maybe release it Thursday the 22nd before we see each other on Friday the 23rd.
Yeah. Do we want to preview a little bit of this upcoming exciting event, or should we save it for next time?
Well, we'll give a big recap next episode, but I guess just to let everyone know, we'll be at the Aukerville River benefit show at Whaleback Mountain.
That's right. Yeah. On sponsored athlete, on as in the shoe that you were, you know, recommended to try.
And then not recommended to try.
Yeah. By the same store, Jeff Colt, you know, sort of brought us, you know, we've been aware of whaleback and circled around it in our talk of minor ski areas of New England, but it came up in very real terms there as you talked about all the night skiing you used to do at whaleback. Who knew that weeks later we would have special guest Will Sheff,
yeah,
playing a benefit for whaleback. It's just the mysterious world of the podcast.
Yeah, and then just weeks after that, we're going to whaleback, and yeah. I'm doing Google searches for where I should run while I'm in Lebanon or Enfield, New Hampshire.
Yeah, we're going to see special guest Will Sheff.
Yeah, maybe see some listeners as well. So that's exciting, and we'll give a nice race recap of that, even if it's not really a proper race.
Yeah, it's a small, you know, tight-knit small community. Listeners, special guests,
yeah,
us humble co-hosts.
We're just going wherever the road may turn, wherever the trail twists and takes us. We're just following that. And if something comes up coincidentally seeming twice in an episode, we'll just go to whatever that is that comes yeah. up. If it's a place, we'll go to it. If it's
our whaleback destiny.
Yeah. If it's music, we'll listen. If it's a pair of shoes, we'll put it on and we'll run. Who knows? We'll do a full Prezi traverse, which I'm still not sure what that is, but we'll do that. And when the time runs out on the episode, of course, we'll say what we always say, which is first we say popular runner Jim Pergolesi. I That's want to right. say it this time. And then we say until next time.
Onward.
Special guest,
Jakob.
This is the power.